B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
GNR and solo artist Duff McKagan is my guest today on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. His new record, Tenderness, drops on May 31st. We talk about the album and how he wrote it. Apparently, he wrote it while on tour.
Yeah, I wrote it all during the tour.
Okay.
I travel with acoustic guitar.
He talks about the overall flavor of the record, as well as a song called Feel, which talks about rockers we've lost.
Scott's death was a thing that I could, you know, he and I went through a lot. I don't know if you know the story before Velvet Revolver.
And more with Duff McKagan. Up second, it's rock photographer Rob Fenn. I'll tell you more about that coming up.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
As I say every week, thank you so much for checking out the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. If this is your first time listening, go back and check out some of the other rockers I've talked to. Just had Damon Johnson on, of course, from Brother Kane and Alice Cooper, the guys from Saliva. I've had Dee Snider on this year, Sammy Hagar, John Five from Rob Zombie's band. Speaking of which, my second guest on the podcast today is going to be rock photographer Rob Fenn. He actually did this great, you know, coffee table book featuring Rob Zombie and his band on tour. We talk about why he likes black and white pictures so much, artists he works with, what makes a good rock picture, how he started the whole thing. He's got this book out right now, which kind of follows the guys from Rise Against. So we'll talk with Rob coming up here in a few minutes. But first, Duff McKagan from Guns N' Roses has his solo record coming out, and it's called Tenderness. Drops on May 31st, produced by Shooter Jennings. And, of course, Duff McKagan. And it says right here, Tenderness has a deluxe book, which comes with it, includes the album and 180-gram yellow and red Starburst vinyl, the CD. It features an exclusive lithograph signed and numbered by Duff. Hardcover book contains 40 pages of photographs from the recording session. Also presents liner notes written by Duff detailing his experiences with each song as well. And I guess the vinyl features 10 tracks put in a unique sequence, carefully selected by Duff and Shooter Jennings. The CD has 11 tracks on it as well. And I listened to the record last night, and like I said to begin the interview here, if you're thinking Guns N' Roses, it's not like that at all. So anyways, this was just a 10-minute interview, and I was told we got to keep it kind of to the Tenderness stuff and kind of avoid the Guns N' Roses question. He did talk a little bit about Guns N' Roses. I thought it was really cool when he started talking about some of the rockers we had lost, like I mentioned in the intro. But enough about me. Let's get to Duff today on Talkin' Rock.
Meltdown, all right.
Hey, man, cool. Yeah, it's kind of funny. I was looking through some pictures the other day for something I was doing at work, and I think the first time I interviewed you was with the Metallica tour in 1992. Yeah. I found a picture of us backstage in Buffalo.
Oh, my God, 92? I probably look like hell.
Well, both of us did.
Okay, all right. Fair enough.
But anyways, man, all these years later, you got a lot of stuff in the irons, of course, a lot of irons in the fire with Tenderness coming out at the end of May here. And it's like I was listening to it last night, and if people are expecting, you know, Welcome to the Jungle and You Could Be Mine, and then you give them, like, you know, maybe Patience and Used to Love Her. It's kind of the dichotomy I kind of heard when I listened to it last night.
Right. Yeah. This record is it's a type of music. It's an austere record. It's a kind of record I've wanted to do for over 20 years. The reason I did it now, it might seem odd, like an odd time for me to put out a record when we're in the middle of all this guns stuff. But topically, I thought it was an important time for me to kind of just put these topics out on the table. They're not finger-pointing topics. It's just real things that are going on, the opioid crisis. And it's not all a downer record, but I address in the song Feel the drug deaths and suicides of Scott Weiland and Chris Cornell and Prince and Chester Bennington. Things were just happening as we were touring, and I was toying with the idea of writing a third book about all of these things that were going on. Parkland, you know, all of that stuff. I mean, what are we going to do about that? And I started writing these things, maybe, like I said, like a third book, but they became these songs for this record. And from touring and going out and being a tourist, like I am when I travel for the last 20 years, I read a lot of history and go out and see the things I read about. I kind of turned off my computer and stopped watching cable news and turned off my Twitter and just started talking to people, and I saw that I really found this kind of overarching feeling of hope around the world. And it's funny, when you turn off all the things that drive us crazy, you get this whole different look.
No, you're right. I went on a cruise last year, 7-day cruise, no TV, no nothing. And you talk to people and everyone got along. Everyone had a great time. There was no arguing, no nothing. You know what I'm saying? So so you said you were working on this, you know, your this thought and your process in your brain for the last 20 years. And then did you kind of start to write it while on this Not in This Lifetime tour? Is that kind of what happened, or how does that work?
Yeah, I wrote it all during the tour.
Okay.
I travel with an acoustic guitar. And it's really an acoustic guitar record, but Shooter Jennings, who produced the record, brought in this just beautiful kind of orchestration, I call it. It's piano, and it's pedal steel, and it's violin, and all kinds of cool, like, 70s synthesizers. And the way we recorded was very 70s. We put the drums from stereo into mono, a very 70s sort of producer trick, and he really brought the all the sparkles to this record.
What are people telling you it sounds like? Because I kept going back kind of like to the Rolling Stones, like Wild Horses kind of vibe. Are people saying that, or am I crazy?
I've heard it a couple times. I've heard all kinds of strange stuff. I was just in the UK over the weekend. You know, I've heard it doesn't sound like anything except for me. I've heard it sounds, there's Bowie stuff in there. Stones. But really, the intention was for none of that. They were just really three chord songs with melodies. And I think when you do bring a pedal steel into something, pedal steel guitar, you're going to get that Exile on Main Street nod.
Right.
They used it a lot there. You're going to get, with a violin, you're going to get sort of, you know, an Americana feel. With synthesizers, you're going to get some weird, like, ELO, you know, ish type of thing. But all of the things combined, I think at the end of the day, made for a really cool, interesting, again, austere. The players, it's funny, the more I play music, the more and more I really am down a rabbit hole on everything I do, bass playing. I'm so interested in what I'm doing. I'm playing acoustic guitar. I really delve into it, and singing, you know, vocal techniques, singing backups for Guns has become a next level thing for me. I get really into it. I want to be the best I can be. And playing with this band, Shooter's band, on this record, they play so little. They taught me a lot about where not to play.
Right, right.
So that's a whole nother, like, oh, yeah, you don't play. Like, just play less, and sometimes less is more.
Now, you just brought up something, you know, with Scott Weil and Chester, and I was at that last Soundgarden show and stuff. Here in Detroit. But how did those deaths affect you? I mean, obviously you know these guys personally and stuff. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so, I mean, Scott's death was a thing that I could, you know, he and I went through a lot. I don't know if you know the story. Before Velvet Revolver, him getting sober, he and I went to the mountains, the Cascade Mountains, for a month, and kind of basically did kung fu for a month, and got him off what he was on. And we then started the band, and he got his family back, and that was my intention. You know, I have a wife and two girls, and my intention, he asked me for help, and I said, if you're ready for help, I can help you, but the way I got sober is through martial arts, so we can do that, you know. And it worked for a while, man, for a good while, a couple of years, and he got his family back and all of that. And then seeing him kind of peel off of that was really sad to watch. And I talked to him a bunch. I said, Scott, this is only going to go one place. You and I both know it. I got a lot of experience with this meltdown, as you know. Mm-hmm. And we saw where that went with Scott. And I didn't really know where to place that in my kind of whole thought process. Prince has been this huge, like, kind of deity in my musical life, a touchstone. You probably wouldn't be able to tell by my playing or anything I've done, but we all have that person as musicians that we really kind of use as touchstones, and Prince was that for me. Him dying like he did, like, completely unexpected for me. And then Chris Cornell, you know, I got stories about all of these people. Our wives were pregnant at the same time. We had the kids 2 weeks apart. We hung out a lot when our girls were small. And I've known him since I was a teenager. So that thing came as, you know, a lot of this came as we were on the road. And then Chester, my wife and I are friends with he and his wife and his kids. The song Feel just kind of came as a collective. The song wrote itself in about 3 minutes. Mm. It was just kind of that sigh of loss and also remembrance. And I don't mention any of their names in the song. And now I just kind of gave away what it's about. But I think if you listen to that song with what I've just told you in mind, it'll have an impact.
Now, last thing here for you, because I know you got a lot of stuff going on. So you just talked about, you know, kind of upping your game as far as backup vocal stuff. You know, as far as bass players, I mean, the stuff you've done early on in the Guns career, you know, with everything from Appetite and User Illusions is so unbelievable. If you took the bass line out of any of those songs, it would completely change the songs. Do you ever feel a little bit maybe underrated as a bass player, or do bass players just automatically feel underrated?
Yeah, you know. I don't know. I don't know where I'm rated there. I don't pay attention to that. I'm really so just all into my craft that it's not a contest. You know, I do the best, try to play the best. Any musician in any band, for a really good band, you know your part in the band, right? If you're a drummer, be the best drummer you can be. If you're a bass player, make yourself as valuable as you can to that band, if you're a rhythm guitar player, lead guitar player, singer. And so I don't know. I didn't start off as a bass player, and Guns was the first band I really, like, oh, I'm going to be a bass player. This is what I'm going to do. And I really dove into it head first and, like, listened to Prince and listened to John Paul Jones and listened to Paul Simonon from The Clash and Lemmy and kind of molded and Killing Joke, like all these cool different bands that really inspired my bass playing. I just kind of took it from there.
Well, that's awesome. You opened up your stadium tour at GNR here, and I'll never forget you and Slash walking out there and Axl walking out behind you, and my buddy next to me just gave me this big, gigantic hug. We couldn't believe that we were seeing it again. So I'm glad that you're out and about and chip away, and all these songs are great. Tenderness comes out at the end of the month, and thanks so much for the time, Duff.
Thank you so much, man. Thank you.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Like I said before, the record drops May 31st, solo album Tenderness. This is really just sit at home and kind of chill album, okay? You're not going to be rocking this one out with your, so your neighbors can hear it anytime soon. But it is definitely kind of a different record as far as that's concerned. You know, like I said before, it's more patience as opposed to Welcome to the Jungle. You got it? All right. So anyways, some cool tracks on there, though. And like you said, he did touch on some social issues as well. Hey, coming up for you next, it's rock photographer Rob Fenney's got this book out right now where he's following around the guys from Rise Against. Let's get right at it and see what Rob's all about today on Talkin' Rock. Hey, Rob, first of all, thanks so much for the time, man. How's things?
Things are good. I appreciate you guys having me on. I love the station.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah, I think I might have bumped into you somewhere like at a Rock on the Range or something like that. You're at all those big festival shows, aren't you?
The past couple years I've been hiding out a little bit, but yeah, I was there for quite a while. And then you guys got that one venue up in the mountains. What's it called?
Now, hang on. I think you're confusing me with someone else because I'm in Detroit. We have no mountains here in Detroit.
Well, it's not mountains. It's out in the middle of something, like out of town.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
We've got DTE, which used to be DTE, which used to be Pine Knob.
Okay, that's what I'm thinking. That's the outdoor one, right?
Yeah, it's the outdoor shed. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, see, I know what I'm talking about, kind of.
Yeah, I guess there is a ski hill behind us, behind that venue, which is like an old dump site, I think.
There you go.
So, yeah, I guess you're right.
My backyard's the Rocky Mountains. I should know the difference. If it's outside, I just say the mountains.
Yeah, I was going to say, nobody says the mountains out here about Detroit. That's for sure. But so you got this book, this Rise Against book. So tell me about that.
Well, it came about, actually, because of Detroit. I seen Rise Against live at the Metallica Orion Festival you guys had.
Oh, yeah.
Was amazing. I mean, I'm riding a school bus at midnight in downtown Detroit singing Wheels on the Bus Go Round and Round with a bunch of drunken Metallica fans. It was so great. So great. But they played the first day, and the energy they had just blew me away. Like, I couldn't believe that, you know, there was no production, there was no nothing, it's a festival, and they just had that crowd mesmerized by them. And so I was like, I'd love to do a photo book with these guys. But I just kind of put it off, you know, I didn't know how to get a hold of them or any of that. And I was on tour that summer with Rob over in Europe, and Piggy's bass tech was Mike Fry, who was Joe's bass tech with Rise Against. And that was his main gig, was Rise Against. And I told him, I'm like, I've seen this band. They're great. I'd love to do a book. And Fry's like, well, I'll hit the guys up, see what they say. And we were at Aftershock later on that year. And I'm chasing Rob around the stage. You know, he's like a squirrel. It's hard to keep up with him. He's moving so damn fast.
Uh-huh.
And out of the corner of my eye, I see the guys from Rise Against on the side stage. I'm like, no way. So after the show, I got to talk to him. We both wanted to do the book real bad, so we started the gears in motion, and it kind of stalled out for a second. And I was down in Phoenix and shooting a country thunder festival or some weird shit. I don't know. It's the only country one I ever done, and I've never done another one. But it was weird. It was a redneck party from hell, and I'm a redneck, and it scared me. And so they were playing another venue, and I went up, and their manager just happened to be there. Like, all the stars were aligned, and we decided to do a book, and I started chasing them across the world. It was great.
And whereabouts unknown from Rise Against. And, I mean, now listen, you've done books with Rob Zombie and stuff before, and correct me if I'm wrong, any other books that we would know about as far as these, like, coffee table-type books besides Rob Zombie?
The Hellstorm one was very popular.
Oh, the Hellstorm, that's right. Yeah, of course.
I was just with those crazies last night, and they get better every time I see them.
Yeah,
I mean, what a show.
They do, and I mean, I talk about this sometimes. I know Lizzie and those guys, you know, a little bit, and it's like, as far as I'm concerned, I've been in this business almost 30 years now. It's hard to find a group of people that are nicer than them.
Oh, their greatest asset is they don't know how famous they are.
Right.
I started working with them in 2012. They're the same people.
Yeah.
They just play a hell of a lot better. You know, they're just always evolving, and they're always super cool to everybody and stuff. Like, I have a shop here in Utah, so I bombarded them with ticket requests, and we all go rolling up there, and they were cool to everybody. And it's just, they're some of my favorite humans ever, and I'm very honored to be able to call them friends and family. Like, they're just good people.
And another person who I know that you're familiar with, who I'm a big fan of as well, and is really good friends with Lizzie Hale also, is Tom Kiefer. I mean, what a musician that guy is.
Dude, the whole reason I picked up a guitar, my fanboy moment was Tom Kiefer.
Is that right?
It was in front of Rob Zombie, and it was hilarious. I'm an idiot. I'm just an uber fan with a past. Like, I'm not a professional or anything. I just love music. And we were at Alice Cooper's Christmas pudding event he does every year.
Right, down in Phoenix or something, right? Oh, Vegas.
Yeah,
okay, yeah.
Normally in Phoenix, but they've done an offshoot in Vegas one year. It was 2013. And we were wrapping up the zombie book, the zombie horror picture show. And so that was the last thing I shot for that book, was that this Christmas thing. And it was weird how it works is they had they had all these singers come in, and then they had a backup band. So that way they didn't have to change anything. Well, one of the singers was Tom Kiefer. And since we didn't have the band and everything, I was tour managing Rob just for this one gig. And I'm the worst tour manager ever because I lost him and shit. And I'm just terrible at that. But me and him walked in, and Kiefer's sound checking. And I'm just like, holy shit, that's Tom Kiefer. Rob looked at me like, huh? And I'm like, dude, high school me is freaking out right now. Like, just freaking out. Because he's the reason I picked up a guitar. I seen that Nobody's Fool video and was just like, I need to learn how to do that. And just loved Tom. Like, he's just a huge influence on me. And so we're backstage, and our dressing room's right next to Kiefer. And they line all the guys up. It was Alice and Rob had a dressing room together. Kiefer and, like, Kip Winger had one right next to us. So the guys had to do a meet and greet with all these people. And so they just lined them outside the door, and then the people rolled through and got to meet everybody and stuff. Well, while we're waiting for it, Rob's on the wall waiting. Kiefer's standing right next to him, and I'm just losing my shit. I'm just like, you know what? I don't care. I got to go talk to this guy. I've never got a selfie with an artist before, not even Rob. You know what I mean? I'm not that guy. Well, I turned into that guy. So I roll up, and I use Lizzie as an in. I'm like, hey, we got the mutual friend. Da, da, da. And I'm like, do you mind if I take a picture? This is in the meet and greet. Like, they're getting ready to do this. This is, like, the most inappropriate time for me to do this shit. And Tom was nice as hell. I take the picture. I'm smiling. Just I'm happy as shit. Like, it was the greatest thing ever. And I'm literally posting it on Instagram as I'm walking back across the hall so I can get ready for the meet and greet. And Zombie's just laughing. And I put my phone in my thing, and he pulls his phone out, and he's just laughing, and he's typing some stuff on his phone. Puts it back in his pocket, just looks at me and starts giggling a little bit. I look at my picture, and he commented on it. He's like, when you're done being a star fucker, get back to work. I'm like, oh, shit.
That sounds exactly like Rob, too. I know John Five a little bit, and it's like, you know, of course, he's from here, you know. And I just saw him in Canton, Ohio for my birthday last month. I went down there and checked him out. But
very cool.
Hey, speaking of
belated birthday.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. I think we're about the same age. And I can remember, you know, Cinderella. 21. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. So, hey, as a matter of fact, I think we have a few things in common. Not only are we rock fans, I have a Harley Davidson and I love whiskey. So those are some of your things, right?
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I just got done with my 73. I'm rebuilding a 77 right now. I might have a little bit of an addiction. So, yeah, well, we would get along just great.
Now, my first two bikes were shovel heads, not to get too much into my life. But now I've kind of evolved. Like, I got a Street Glide now because the first time I saw a Street Glide in 2007, I'm only 5'6". I'm like, I can't get one of these big baggers, you know. But it's like, I get on my bike in Detroit and get off in my hometown in Buffalo. Some of my friends that ride these old shovel heads and stuff, we go, you do what? It's like, yeah, I ride all the way there. But you know how that goes. So, hey, listen, I wanted to ask you about your Instagram and some of your pictures and stuff, because I noticed that there's one common theme with all your pictures on Instagram. They're all in black and white. Is that your thing?
I love black and white.
Okay.
I love black and white. To me, it's just timeless. I mean, how I got into the whole business, it was a black and white picture. And it just creates that moment and that memory. And there's nothing – I've done an interview – it was just a little bit ago that I upset a couple photographers. They're like, well, what's wrong with color? I'm like, you're an idiot. There's nothing wrong with anything. It's like, we all create what we want to create. I just prefer this, and it's special to me. That's how this shit works. And I always, everything I seen, like, I'm a huge Jim Marshall fan, and his stuff is just priceless. And I love how he captured everything. And it was all black and white. He shot with a Leica monochrome and stuff. And a friend of mine knew Jim very well, and he said Jim would walk into a room, and he'd ask you, hey, where's the whiskey? And he'd point over to where the whiskey is, and then he'd snap the shot. Because I couldn't figure out how he always captured just this cool shit. It didn't look staged, none of that. And that's how he done it, is he just built relationships with these people, and they trusted him, and they're relaxed around him, and he drank a lot, you know? The greatest advice I ever got was, finish shit, send it out, somebody's going to be drunk somewhere and say yes.
Well, you know, it's funny because, like, you started this kind of later in your life, and maybe you're a lot like me where you wanted to do something in the rock and roll business, and this is just for me speaking, and I wasn't talented enough to play a musician or to play an instrument or be a musician or do whatever, so I'm like, I'm going to get into radio. Maybe that's what happened with you. It's like, you know, maybe you wanted to be in the rock and roll business as well, but you discovered this love for photography, and that's how you got your in.
Oh, I accidentally stepped in photography. I actually was in radio. I wanted to be a rock star when I was little. I was the kid with the tennis racket at 5 years old.
Right, right.
Juice Newton, Queen of Hearts, screaming my head off. And I got a guitar, and I just immersed myself in it and loved it. And I just couldn't find the right group of people to play with. And I was given a local DJ hell at K-Bear in Salt Lake one day for hockey tickets. And I went on the air and we just clicked, and then I fell into radio. I quit a very high-paying job to get $5 an hour to intern for this crazy dude for 2 years.
Dude, our stories and almost sound exactly the same.
Amazing. So I was a K-Bear for a while. I got upset with my boss, and I super glued the door shut, laced a 30-minute tape telling him to go fuck himself. They played for 8 hours. They couldn't get the door broke down. I went to KBPI in Denver. I was the creative service director there. We merged into Clear Channel. Then we merged into AM/FM, and then all that bullshit. So long story short, I helped start all of that, the Clear Channel concerts and stuff, and just love music. And so I've always been in the music business. 9/11 hit. I got laid off because I was making too much money. Numbers didn't match up, as you know how radio went after that.
Mm-hmm.
Napster killed everything. And I decided to buy a nightclub. Don't ever do that. Don't ever, ever do that. I'm a functioning alcoholic, and it sounded like a great idea. But just everything can go wrong. So long story short on that, I'm dead broke at 35. I'm living on my parents' basement, not in a room. Like, my other brothers and sisters were in there still. So I had a slab of cement literally downstairs. And I wanted to start a radio station, an online magazine with a radio station built in. And this is when all the blogs and shit were coming up.
Right.
And so I wanted a real radio station. I love you guys' station. I've been a fan for a long time. In fact, I applied for it after I super glued the door shut. Your GM told me not a chance in hell am I letting you in my thing. In fact, I might have got the job because there was a few the PD loved it, and then they found out who I was, and like, no, not even a god was producing. No. So I hit up a friend of mine at Warner Brothers because I built these relationships through the years in the industry. And to me, that's the key of everything.
Right.
Don't be an asshole.
Right.
I am an asshole, but don't purposely be an asshole. And you never know who's who.
Yep.
It's such a small business. And so I hit up a friend of mine at Warner. I'm like, can I get a photo pass? Because I designed websites and done radio imaging, the stuff you hear between songs and all that. And that's how I was getting my money. And I needed 75 grand to start this company. And nobody's going to give this kid living, well, I'm not even a kid, this 35-year-old dude with a daughter living on their parents' basement. And I got a photo pass for Disturbed and Seven Dust, and then they gave me one for Avenged Sevenfold. And I borrowed a camera from a friend of mine at the Tribune, rolled up to Disturbed, got in the pit, acted like I knew what I was doing, downloaded the pictures. The worst picture you've ever took with your iPhone at a concert was better than what I did. I couldn't even tell what the hell I did. I'm like, I pushed the button. What the Christ, you know? And so I like Avenged. I was like, it was pretty cool to be in that pit to see it that up close. I'm not going to lie. Like, I was like, I'm just going to go so I can go do that.
Right.
Well, Papa Roach was opening up for him. And I roll in there, and there's no photographers for Papa Roach. I had the pass for Avenged Sevenfold. Now, mind you, I don't know how these passes work. I figured you had one, you can do whatever. So I go in there. Jacoby's looking at me like he's going to slit my throat. And I get out after a couple of songs, and I'm downloading the pictures to my computer side stage, and the tour manager comes up, and he's inventing new swear words to call me and just screaming and like, what are you doing? And I'm like, showed him my pass. He's like, I don't work here. There's no photography. And da-da-da. Me and the tour manager are friends now, and I actually toured with Papa Roach a couple times, and they're great humans.
Right, right, yeah.
I had just hit it perfectly. I can't remember what it was, but there was something with some photographer that they were dealing with that done shit they shouldn't have. And it was like within 24 hours. So they weren't allowing any photographers at the moment. And I don't remember what happened. But then there's my dumbass in there thinking that it's okay. And so I about went home. I was just like, this photography thing's stupid as hell. People suck. I'm over this. But I wanted to see the show. So I went in for one song with Avenged. I put the camera to my face because I couldn't just sit there and act like, you know. And every time I saw something cool, I just kind of clicked the button and left it at that. A couple weeks later, I download the pictures. I look at them, and I see one of Brian the Sinister, and I'm just like, holy shit, I took that? That's cool. And I looked at a few others, and I'm like, I want to do this for a living. So I posted the Sinister one and kind of left it at that. And I started talking to photographers and everyone on, you know, how do you make a living doing this? No one could tell me. I'm like, this camera equipment's not cheap. How
right.
are you doing this?
Right.
There's like 8 or 12 people in the damn pit. And nobody was making a living at it. And I'm like, yeah, I want to make a living at it. So I took 8 months and kind of put a business plan together and tried to figure out some stuff and put it together. 2 years later, I'm on tour with Avenged Sevenfold, telling the same long, drawn-out story I had to just suffer your listeners through. If there is any left after this, I'm sorry. And I show it to Dan the Body. Are you familiar with Avenged and their crew? You remember Dan that used to tour with them?
Yeah, he passed away, didn't he?
I don't think.
Oh no, that was the shirt. That's what I'm thinking of. But I don't know Dan.
Yeah,
I might have met Dan. I know Zachy. So go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. They called him Dan the Body. He was with them for the first little while, and he does a bunch of stuff in Huntington and stuff now.
Okay.
But I showed him that picture. He's like, "Oh, we've seen that." I'm like, "No, you haven't. Don't be lying." You know, I'm like, "What the hell?" I'm like, "I put it on Facebook once." He's like, "No, seriously. We got a friend in Texas that has a tattoo parlor. A customer came in, wanted a picture of Brian on their arm. We didn't have one, so Sin Googled this shit, picked that picture, and it's running around on this lady's arm all over. I'm like, what? And so it's just a small world, and that's how I fell into it. I had no idea. I still can't run a camera. I get people that want me to do workshops and stuff like that, and I'm like, I'm sorry, but I'm not that dude. I just don't know how to do it. I know what I like and I know what I see. And for some reason, it's working right now. I wake up every day going, do I still get to do this today? And then move forward.
Hey, let me ask you about this. So it's obviously, you know, like you were talking about, it's good to, you know, have connections, you know, not be a jerk off to guys and different things like that. So you kind of started this business in this business, in 2009. I got a bunch of questions about that. First of all, do you think that was a good time to get in? And do you think that right now that there's kind of like an oversaturation of like people with cell phone cameras and different things where, you know what I'm saying? It's like where it is hard to make a living at doing something like this.
Well, the hardest thing about it is I got one friend and she's been a photographer. Like she went to school for it and stuff. And she's amazing. And she used to do weddings and, you know, all that kind of stuff. She has a second job now because Uncle Joey has a camera or everything's easy to do or people have cell phones.
Right.
You know? And it's the scariest thing about today, and I am old, and I know every generation bitches about the next and all of that, but here's my thing with it, is when I was going to concerts, my first concert was Aerosmith. I paid $8.50 to see it. There wasn't a cell phone in the place.
Right.
You can't clap your hands with one hand and a phone in the other.
Mm.
We just went ape shit. It was just fun. It was a release. All of this. It was, I mean, anyone that's seen a Pantera show knows what I'm talking about.
Right, right.
So nowadays, like I said, I just shot Hellstorm last night. and there was three photographers in the pit with cell phones. And I'm sitting there going, what in the Sam hell are you doing? You know, I don't get it. And there's so many avenues for stuff now that it's, I know record companies are evil. I own one. But they were the gateway that got rid of the bullshit. And you could discover new music because you had your favorite DJ on the air. Nowadays, there's so many podcasts and bullshit. And I can't even, I don't even know where I could advertise for something and make it work nowadays. There's not that tradition or that loyalty.
Well, there's so many avenues that it's like it gets a little bit like it's just a lot of white noise out there.
Exactly. And so to discover, and I tell people this, I'm like, you tell me one new artist that's going to last. And Sturgill Simpson's the only one that comes to mind.
Yeah, it's funny because
prove me wrong. There's nobody out there that's came out in the past 5 years that make me go, oh my God, you know, and like, look at Hellstorm. Everyone thinks they're an overnight success. 25 years they've been doing this shit.
Right.
25 years.
Hey, what about our Michigan boys there, Greta Van Fleet? They've made quite a splash.
They are. It's great. It's weird those things. Like, I shot Dorothy. She was opening up for them.
Yeah, she's great, yeah.
And so I went to the show, and I didn't know what to expect. You know what I mean? I've heard the Led Zeppelin cover band jokes and all of that. And I was a little bummed that they said Aerosmith was an influence and not Zeppelin. It's like, come on. You got to give Robert Plant. Like, come on. It's fucking Zeppelin. But the greatest thing about them, love them or hate them, look at their show. There's everyone from 5 years old to 55 there, and they're selling out. And to me, that's great because that says people still want to see music.
Right.
And that is what I was just like, this is cool. And so them guys got my vote for everything. I might not like some of the shit they say, but it is what it is, just because I'm a Zeppelin fan and an Aerosmith fan. And I don't hear Aerosmith in their music. I hear Zeppelin.
Right.
I'm old, so right. I might be mishearing it, you know. But they are doing something for the rock world that people haven't been doing, and they're getting different ages in there. They're getting kids to pick up a Gibson instead of pick up a video game controller. That's a big thing. You know, we need music back in the schools. It's a proven fact. It's fucking science. That if you play an instrument, you do better. You don't have to be good at the instrument, but it's just that outlet. And, you know, it's gone away. Like, try to jam with anybody nowadays. No one knows how to fucking play. And
yeah.
That's scary.
Yeah, there's a few out there, though, that you know, like a John 5 and stuff that are just unbelievable. But
screw him. Like, dude, here's a John 5 story for you. And I love him. So if this gets taken out of context, fuck all of you people.
Right.
But so his guitar tech, Chavez, handed him the wrong guitar one night. So there's different tunings on guitars and stuff. And instead of John bitching and moaning like someone normally would do, he just played it anyway, but just skiwampused his fingers to make it work and rolled over to Chavez. Got the wrong one. That's it. Like, the dude's the nicest guy ever. But my point to it is he's so talented, you could give him the wrong tuning guitar and he'll fix it on his own, like be out there and just jamming.
No, he's a sweet guy, man, no question about it.
Yeah.
One of the best.
He's just an amazing. If you're a guitarist and you don't like John 5, you're a fucking communist. It's just weird.
All right, hey, listen, Rob, final question for you here, because I know you got stuff to do. I know you got your shop, and that's really interesting, too. But I wanted to know, like, in your opinion, what makes a great rock photo?
Oh God, now I got to think of something. No. There's so many different things, but to me, and this is just my opinion, and that's like it is with any kind of art. It's an opinion. It's not me saying if you don't agree with my opinion, yours is wrong. But to me, it's got to be that timeless. Like when you look at it, you just go, holy shit. Even if you weren't there, like that Elton John one, where he's playing the piano at Dodger Stadium, is iconic can get. Like, you'll never see something like that again. I got one of Lizzie when they played in the rain in Chicago. but every time I see it, I just remember that day. And I got people that weren't there, and they see that going, holy shit. And to me, that's the thing, the one that moves you, where you see it, and you don't even got to ask about it. You're just like, wow, that's a picture. And that's what I like. Cell phones can't do it. Video can't do it. Your snappy chat that you think is disappearing and some kid in Thailand's rubbing their junk to it can't do it. It's just, you need that thing that moves you. And there's so many cool pictures out there that do. Like, it's just, whether it's rock photography, you know, I got a buddy that just went to Africa and shot a bunch of cool crap. It's just, you know, stuff that makes you go, wow. And you appreciate what's been shot. So, to me, it can be black and white, it can be color, it can be whatever, but something that moves you is what makes a timeless, great photo.
Well, I'll tell you what, man, you've taken several of them, and the book Rise Against is out right now, of course, the Rob Zombie book, the Hailstorm book, all that great stuff. And give your shop a plug real fast in Utah.
I got a shop, Cut and Scratch, and it's a barbershop, coffee shop, record shop, because I always wanted a record store when I was a kid. They make no money. Right. None. But you can't download a haircut on Amazon. So I was drunk one day and threw two barbers in, and it worked. But we also rebuild Vintage Harleys in here, and it's just kind of an excuse for me to do all the stuff I want to do.
Yeah, and the shop is killer. I saw it online and stuff. That's really cool, man.
The coolest part about the shop is you never know who's stopping in. There's been so many famous people in this little tiny town that are just passing through and hop in. You know, it's been great. It's a cool vibe. And if you're ever in central Utah, stop by, hang out, shoot a game of pool. We'll shoot the shit about music.
There he is, rock photographer Rob Fenn, today on Talking Rock with Meltdown. You see his work all over the place. I mean, it's just unbelievable how this guy has just gone through the ranks since just 2009. You know, and it takes a little bit, you know, a little something that the artist will trust you enough to, you know, bring out on tour, take you into backstage areas during their, you know, quiet moments or downtime or whatever. So pretty cool stuff right there from Rod. Punch him up, by the way, and you can check out his all of his stuff on his website. You know, the shop he was talking about, the motorcycles, just a lot of really cool stuff. Hey, if you made it this far and you think this podcast deserves a 5-star rating, by all means, I'm not going to stop you. Write a review and check out our feedback line as well, 248-586-2988. You can leave your feedback, and we'll get back at it again real soon. Got some other interviews kind of percolating right now. So, as always, thank you so much for checking out Talkin' Rock.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.